This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hi, this is Mary Grady from AvWeb, and today we're bringing you the full testimony of a couple of people who spoke at a hearing earlier this week in the U.S. House, a hearing convened by the Aviation Subcommittee. And the topic there was to learn about what happened in Flight 1549, which ditched in the Hudson a couple of weeks ago, and see what they could find out, what went right about this accident that everyone was able to survive, and also what could be learned about possible hazards that could be mitigated in the future. So the first person we hear from is Patrick Harton, who was the air traffic controller on duty in the tower that day. And this was the first time that he spoke publicly about his experience during that accident. And then we also hear the full testimony from Captain Chesley Sullenberger, who was in command of the flight. And he actually uses his time in this hearing not so much to talk about what happened that day, but what he anticipates will happen to his to the airline industry in the future if things don't change, and things that could really threaten the safety of that system coming up in future decades. So first of all, we'll hear from Patrick Harton, and then next we'll hear the full testimony from Captain Sullenberger as well.
The chair now recognizes Mr. Harton for his testimony.
Good morning, Chairman Costello, Ranking Member Petri. My name is Patrick Harton. I have been an air traffic controller at the New York Tricon, and I'm a proud member of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association for the past 10 years. While January 15, 2009 is forever etched in my memory, it began unremarkably. I arrived at work at 12:30 p.m. to begin my 8-hour shift. At 3:12 p.m., I was assigned to work LaGuardia Departure Radar Position. This position handles all departures from LaGuardia Airport. At 3:25 p.m., the LaGuardia Tower controller advised me that Cactus 1549 was the next departure rolling for takeoff. Just for clarification, Cactus is the call sign for U.S. Airways. It was a routine westbound departure off runway 4, traveling due north on a 360-degree heading and climbing to 5,000 feet. I instructed Cactus to climb to 15,000 and turned my attention to another aircraft to give him instructions under my control. I then turned back to Cactus 1549 and instructed him to turn left to a heading of 270, heading the aircraft towards its destination. That is when the captain advised me that they suffered a bird strike, lost thrust in both engines, and needed to return to LaGuardia for an emergency landing. When a pilot tells a controller he needs to make an emergency landing, the controller must act quickly and decisively. I made a split-second decision to offer him runway 13, which was the closest runway to his current position, and turned him left to a heading of 220 so he could return to the airport. I then immediately contacted LaGuardia Tower and asked them to stop departures and clear the runway for an emergency return. While I've worked 10 or 12 emergencies over the course of my career, I have never worked an aircraft with zero thrust capabilities. I understood how grave the situation was. After I gave him his instructions, the captain very calmly stated, "We're unable." I quickly vectored another aircraft that was still in my airspace and gave 1549 a second option, land on LaGuardia runway 31. Again, the captain said unable. I then asked the captain what he needed to do to land safely. At this point, my job was to coordinate and arrange for the pilot to be able to do whatever was necessary. The pilot told me he could not land on any runway at LaGuardia, but asked if he could land in New Jersey and suggested Teterboro. I had experienced working traffic in Teterboro from my time working in the Newark sector. And after coordinating with the controllers in Teterboro, we were able to determine that runway 1 was his best option. It was an arrival runway, and clearing it for an emergency landing would be easier and faster. It also meant 1549 would be landing into the wind, which could have assisted the pilot in making a safe landing. I called Teterboro and explained the situation. The controller Teterboro reacted quickly and paired runway 1 for the emergency landing. I then instructed the captain to turn right to a heading of 280 to land runway 1. The captain replied, "We can't do it." I replied immediately, "Which runway would you like at Teterboro?" The captain replied, "We're going to be in the Hudson." I asked him to repeat himself, even though I heard him just fine. I simply could not wrap my mind around those words. People do not survive landings on the Hudson River, and I thought it was his own death sentence. I believed at that moment I was going to be the last person to talk to anyone on that plane alive. I then lost radio contact with 1549, and the target disappeared from my radar screen as he dropped below the tops of the New York skyscrapers. I was in shock. I was sure the plane had gone down. Less than a minute later, 1549 flickered back onto my radar scope. The aircraft was at a very low altitude, but its return to radar coverage meant that there was a possibility 1549 had regained use of one of its engines. Grasping at that tiny glimmer of hope, I told 1549 that it could land Newark 7 miles away on runway 29, but I received no response. I then lost radar contact again, this time for good. I was relieved from my position a few moments later, as soon as it was possible. I was in no position to continue to work air traffic. It was the lowest low I've ever felt. I wanted to talk to my wife, but I knew if I tried to speak or even heard her voice, I would completely fall apart. I settled for a hasty text message. Had a crash, I'm not okay, can't talk now. When I got home, she told me she thought that I was in a car accident. Truth was, I felt like I'd been hit by a bus. It took 6 hours before I could leave the facility. I had to review the tapes, fill out paperwork, and make an official statement. It may sound strange, but for me, the hardest, most traumatic part of the entire event was when it was over. During the emergency itself, I was hyper-focused. I had no choice but think and act quickly and remain calm. But when it was over, it hit me hard. It felt like hours before I learned about the heroic water landing Captain Sullenberger and his crew had managed. Even after I learned the truth, I could not shake the image of tragedy in my mind. Every time I saw the survivors on television, I imagined grieving widows. It's taken me over a month for me to be able to see that I did a good job. I was flexible and responsive. I listened to what the pilot said and made sure to give him the tools that he needed. I stayed calm and in control. I returned to work this week, and while it may take some time for me to regain my old confidence, I know I will get there. I would like to end by personally recognizing the captain and crew of Flight 1549 for their professionalism, skill, and heroic efforts of that day. I would like to recognize the professionalism of the other controllers who helped clear the skies and the runways for 1549, as well as the engineers who helped ensure that the aircraft itself could survive landing in the Hudson and that those inside would be safe. Finally, I want to thank my wife, Regina. She has been my rock these past few weeks, as she always has and always will be. I couldn't have survived this without her. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm prepared to answer any questions you might have.
We thank you, Mr. Hartman.
Okay, now we'll hear the full testimony from Captain Chesley Sullenberger.
Thank you, Chairman Costello, Ranking Members Micah and Petri, and other members of the committee. It is my great honor to appear before the Aviation Subcommittee today. I am proud of the fact that I have been involved in aviation for the last 42 years. During that time, I have served our country as a U.S. Air Force pilot, served as an Airline Pilots Association, Local Air Safety Committee Chairman, Accident Investigator, and National Technical Committee Member. I've amassed a total flying time of almost 20,000 hours and flown approximately 1 million passengers in my 29 years as a professional airline pilot. I have served as a check airman and a crew resource management course developer and facilitator. I'm also the founder of Safety Reliability Methods Incorporated. Before I begin, I must first say that my heart goes out to all those affected by the tragic loss of Continental Connection Colgan Air Flight 3407. Words cannot express my sadness and grief at the loss of 50 lives. The families of those no longer with us are in my thoughts and in my heart. The events of January 15, 2009 have been well documented, and rather than recite them now in great detail, I want only to reiterate to the subcommittee that the successful outcome was achieved by the actions of many. Lives were saved due to the combination of a very experienced, well-trained crew, First Officer Jeff Skiles and Flight Attendants Donna Dent, Doreen Welch, and Sheila Dale, all of whom acted in a remarkable display of teamwork, along with expert air traffic controllers, the orderly cooperation of our cool-headed passengers, and the quick and determined actions of the professional and volunteer first responders in New York City. The events of January 15th serve as a reminder to us all of the daily devotion to duty of the many thousands of aviation professionals who keep air travel safe, and also as a reminder of what is really at stake. I, like thousands of my professional airline pilots, know that flying a large commercial airline is a tremendous responsibility. We clearly understand that our passengers put their lives in our hands. We know that we must always be prepared. We must always anticipate. we must always be vigilant, expecting the unexpected, and having an effective plan for dealing with it must be in the very makeup of every professional airline pilot. I'm not only proud of my crew, I'm proud of my profession. Flying has been my lifelong passion. I count myself fortunate to have spent my life in the profession I love, with colleagues whom I respect and admire. But while I love my profession, I do not like what has happened to it. I would not be doing my duty if I did not report to you that I'm deeply troubled about its future. Americans have been experiencing huge economic difficulties in recent months, but airline employees have been experiencing those challenges and more for 8 years. We've been hit by an economic tsunami. September 11th, bankruptcies, fluctuating fuel prices, mergers, loss of pensions, and revolving door management teams who have used airline employees as an ATM have left the people who work for the airlines in the United States with extreme economic difficulties. It is an incredible testament to the collective character, professionalism, and dedication of my colleagues in the industry that they are still able to function at such a high level. It is my personal experience that my decision to remain in the profession I love has come at a great financial cost to me and to my family. My pay has been cut 40%. My pension, like most airline pensions, has been terminated and replaced by a PBGC guarantee worth only pennies of the dollar. While airline pilots are by no means alone in our financial struggles, I want to acknowledge how difficult it is for everyone right now. It is important to underscore that the terms of our employment have changed dramatically from when I began my career, leading to an untenable financial situation for pilots and their families. When my company offered pilots who had been laid off the chance to return to work, 60% refused. Members, I attempt to speak accurately and plainly, so please do not think I exaggerate when I say that I do not know a single professional airline pilot who wants his or her children to follow in their footsteps. I am worried that the airline piloting profession will not be able to continue to attract the best and the brightest. The current experience and skills of our country's professional airline pilots come from investments made years ago when we were able to attract the ambitious, talented people who now frequently seek professional careers elsewhere. That past investment was an indispensable element in our commercial aviation infrastructure, vital to safe air travel and our country's economy and security. If we do not sufficiently value the airline piloting profession, and future pilots are less experienced and less skilled, it logically follows that we will see negative consequences to the flying public and to our country. We face remarkable challenges in our industry. In order to ensure economic security and an uncompromising approach to passenger safety, management must work with labor to bargain in good faith. We must find collective solutions that address the huge economic issues we face in recruiting and retaining the experienced and highly skilled professionals that the industry requires and that passenger safety demands. But further, we must develop and sustain an environment in every airline and aviation organization, a culture that balances the competing needs of accountability and learning. We must create and maintain the trust that is the absolutely essential element of a successful and sustainable safety reporting system to detect and correct deficiencies before they lead to an accident. We must not let the economic and financial pressures detract from a focus on constantly improving our safety measures and engaging in ongoing and comprehensive training. In aviation, the bottom line is that the single most important piece of safety equipment is an experienced, well-trained pilot. Despite the bad economic news we've experienced in recent times, despite the many challenges we face as a country, I have faith in America, in our people, in our promise. I have briefly touched upon some major problems in my industry today, but I do not believe that they are intractable should we decide to work collectively to solve them. We all have roles to play in this effort. Despite the economic turbulence hitting our industry, the airline companies must refocus their attention and their resources on the recruitment and retention of highly experienced and well-trained pilots and make that a priority that is at least equal to their financial bottom line. Jeff and I and our fellow pilots will fly our planes and continue to upgrade our education and our skills while we attempt to provide for our families. Patrick and the other talented air traffic controllers will continue to guide us safely through the skies. Our passengers will spend their hard-earned money to pay for their travel, and our flight attendants, mechanics, ground crews, and administrative personnel will deal with the thousands of constant details and demands that keep our planes safely in the air. You can help us, as chairman, honorable members, to work together across party lines and can demand or legislate that labor, management, safety experts, educators, technical experts, and everyday Americans join together to find solutions to these problems. We all honor our responsibilities in good faith and respect one another. We must keep the American commercial aviation industry safe and affordable for passengers and financially viable for those who work in the industry day to day. And for those talented young men and women considering what to do with their lives, we must restore the narrative of a compelling career path in aviation with sufficient economic resources to once again make this vision a reality. Thank you for your kind attention and for the opportunity to share my experiences with this committee.
Again, this is Mary Grady from AvWeb, and if you go to our site at avweb.com, you'll find links to the hearing where you'll find the full text of all testimony from everyone who spoke at the panel, and also complete video of the event.
This podcast has been brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine. For more on aviation safety, log on to www.aviationsafetymagazine.com.